everybody. Welcome back from your very quick bathroom break. My name is Lynn Thomas. I'm going to be the moderator for this here panel. This is the Doctor Who and the Doctor Who fandom panel. Hi. I'm sitting up here because I'm one of the editors of Chicks Dig Time Lords, and we have surrounding me several Chicks Who Dig Time Lords officially in the book, and two more that weren't in the book but also dig Time Lords very deeply. What I'm going to ask each of our panelists to do is to introduce themselves very briefly, and to talk about the things in their experiences in fandom that have been formative for them. And then we're going to talk a little bit about sort of the weird things that happen in fandom, because that's fun. And then we're going to open it up to the audience for questions. So that's the structure of the panel. Just so you know, I am the iron fist of moderation, and I'm going to be using it. So we're gonna keep this trucking along, and hopefully everybody gets a chance to have their say. Rock and roll. All right. So Tammy, why don't you introduce yourself first, please?
I'm Tammy Garrison. I made Torchwood Babies. I have stuff in other books because of Torchwood Babies. And my life looks so much cooler on paper than it does in real life.
I'm Jennifer Kelly. I am the programming director of Chicago TARDIS, which is the local Doctor Who convention every Thanksgiving weekend here. I'm also co-owner of Gallifrey Base, which is the world's largest Doctor Who internet forum. And I've been in fandom since 1982, so I'm rather ancient.
My name is Erica Ensign. I am co-host and technical producer of the Doctor Who podcast, Verity.
Cool. Oh, sorry.
Thanks, Carol.
I'm still Lynn Thomas.
I'm in fandom right now.
I'm still Lynn Thomas. I'm still the co-editor of Chicks Dig Time Lords, and I am a contributor to the Verity podcast.
I'm Jillian Leach, and I'm a historian, and I wrote a book, I edited the book, Doctor Who in Time and Space.
Yeah, cool. I'm Carol Barrelman, and I have been in fandom since 68, whenever was the first Doctor Who show, and I live in fandom, I think, given my sibling, and I have written lots of things about, have a piece in Chicks Dig Time Lords. John and I wrote the introduction to Queers Dig Time Lords, ooh, which I believe is coming out
in May.
John and I also wrote, with full approval of Russell and cohorts, Exodus Code, the Torchwood novel that, if you're interested in, I brought some copies to sell. And so I'm just happy to be on a panel and share silly stories if anybody wants to hear them. Oh, and my real life, I'm a professor of English at Alverno College. So.
Okay, so we've each sort of talked about the things that we're kind of known for and are among the reasons that we were invited to be sitting up here. What I'd like us to do now is to go around and talk about one of our formative fandom experiences personally. So sort of one of those things that made us realize the depth of our fanishness or realize that this is a wacky and wonderful world that we live in, and to talk about that experience that was sort of, give us your best bar story. That's what we're going to do.
How about I start out?
Go ahead, Carol.
I'll start out. When I was working on Anything Goes and I Am What I Am, John's autobiographies, I had the pleasure of hanging out on the set of Torchwood for probably 10 weeks. So much so, and this is one of my cool fandom moments, is that I got a chair that said Barrelman on the back, and then somebody put a little C on it.
Nice.
So yes, thank you. They wouldn't ship it to me, but thank you anyway. So that was the first thing. The second thing, the first day we were on set, John had, of course, told everyone that I was going to be there, and I had all the passes and all the right things, because the set is completely shrouded in a black curtain, because that's where the TARDIS is inside this big black curtain. And Torchwood, you'd have to walk around this black curtain to get to the Torchwood set. And people did. They just walked around this black curtain. So John and I are coming into this place, and I'm like, what's when he said, the TARDIS is behind there. So because he's also a big geek and a big fan. So we're walking, and we're walking. This is, you know, let's imagine this is the black curtain. So the black curtain's here, and we're walking, and pretty soon we're going like this. Pretty soon we're going. And he's right behind me, and so he's got his hands right here, and he shoves me through this black curtain, and there is the TARDIS. And the two of us, I'm not kidding you, stand there, and we go, yeah! He, of course, has already been on the TARDIS, but as Captain Jack. So this was John and Carol remembering all these years when we were watching the show. And so we get up on there, and you know, the I don't know what the hell you call the thing where you pull down and the thing goes up and down. And, you know,
console.
The console, thank you very much. So he said, put your hand on it. So I put my hand on it, and I'm getting ready to go like this. And a weevil jumps right up from the middle. Oh. He, of course, had paid the guy, or not paid the guy, but asked the weevil to stand down there. I go like this. He jumps up. I wet my pants. John laughs. But my big moment was standing on the TARDIS, I have to say. That was, yeah. Even bigger than having my children.
Okay, but where
do your children know this?
Yes, my children know this.
Where does it rate with Kissing David Tennant?
Kissing David Tennant would maybe be, I don't know, the TARDIS was pretty damn big. Because do you know, it's bigger in the inside. Yeah.
Okay.
Jillian. Sorry.
No. Yeah. My story's not nearly this good, but that's
good, okay. I sit that. Too yeah. quiet at the no. last panel, so I figured.
Yeah. Okay, so it's fall of 1984, and I'm a teenager, and I see an advertisement in the newspaper for a Doctor Who fan club opening in Edmonton. So I go in, and we watch the Pyramid of Mars, and we're in a back room of a stained glass studio, and all of a sudden I realize that other people like Doctor Who, and they're somewhat geeky, but they talk about Doctor Who, and it's lots of fun, and I all of a sudden realize that there's a whole world of fans out there, and I really got into it, and then I went, in 1986, I went to a Time Fest in Spokane, and I got to meet Sergeant Benton, the Brigadier. I got to meet Joe, I got to meet Captain Yates, and I got to meet the producer, John Nathan Turner, and I got an autograph from all of them, and then I also was really great, the guy who played the Master gave me a master role-playing game, and he signed it. And I was like, wow, you can meet these people, and you can watch the show, and then you can talk to people about the show, and then it was like a total fandorama. I was it was a whole new world, and I absolutely adored it. So that's my defining moment, yeah.
I probably don't have a single defining moment. Those of you who've read Shakespeare Time Lords know that I married into fandom. I had not been fanish until I met my husband, and then he showed me Remembrance of the Daleks, and I went, ah, this. This is for me. Because angry 19-year-old blonde with a baseball bat, I'm all over that. For me, I think one of the things that has been really revelatory in fandom for me is, given that you guys have seen my daughter Caitlin wandering around here in her wheelchair, given that we have additional special circumstances in terms of life and transportation, what has been revelatory and has continued to fuel my fanishness has been how kind and lovely every single person affiliated with the series in any way has been to us and to Caitlin. And that moment when you're at Chicago TARDIS and you're backstage because you're the littlest guest because you have a book out, and you're standing next to Louise Jameson and she pulls you aside and tells you what a wonderful parent you are, that's the moment where you start to cry a little bit. Because one of the most amazing strong female role models you've seen on Doctor who is in person one of the kindest, loveliest people, most genuine people you will ever meet. Louise Jameson is just a sweetheart from beginning to end. When she compliments you on your parenting, you kind of lose it. And to a person, every Doctor Who actor that we have encountered in any situation has been absolutely fantastic and lovely and kind to us, and gone out of their way to be so, which is something that, you know, actors don't have to do that when they're being professional and are here to dance for our pleasure, which is pretty much what they're doing at a convention. They're being paid to be there and be nice to us. But they go out of their way, and that is something that makes this fandom super special. So that's my thing.
Erica. Okay. I find Doctor Who fandom endlessly fascinating because it has endless facets. Everybody's story is different. Everybody's experience with the show is different. So I will share mine, because I can say with absolutely no exaggeration whatsoever that discovering the world of Doctor Who fandom was the most important thing that has ever happened to me. My story starts with social media. Well, technically it starts about 30 years ago when I became a Doctor Who fan at the age of 5. But I didn't discover fandom until later, so fast forward 30 years, until just a few years ago. I'm a late adopter. For many years, I thought Facebook was really stupid, and I just couldn't understand Twitter or, like, what it was for.
I still don't understand Twitter.
My little sister assured me that they were wonderful things and that I would love them, and I should have listened to her because she's a librarian. Always listen to the librarians. So eventually I capitulated, and boy howdy, am I glad that I did, because Twitter brought me to a podcast called The Nerdist Podcast, hosted by Chris Hardwick. Some fans in the audience. He is a very vocal, enthusiastic Doctor Who fan. And he brought me to Kyle Anderson, who is the writer who writes all the Doctor Who posts on the Nerdist.com website. And both Chris and Kyle were being interviewed on a Doctor Who podcast. And I was like, there's a whole podcast devoted to Doctor Who? That's amazing. Little did I know. But it completely blew my mind. So through that podcast, Radio Free Scarrow, I discovered a far-flung family that I never knew that I had. Doctor Who fandom has tons and tons of special and creative corners, and my corner of fandom is the Doctor Who podcasting world. The podcasters, they just took me in to their little family and made me feel welcome, and it was like finding a family that I never knew that I had. So they convinced me to start coming to conventions, the way my mom did when I was a little kid. And they encouraged me to blog about Doctor Who and whatever other geeky stuff I wanted to do. They helped me start my own shared Doctor Who podcast. So huge, huge thank you to Lynn and her husband, Michael, for that, without whom it would not have happened. And then one other fellow in particular, a host of that very same Doctor Who podcast that I encountered in the first place, Stephen Shapansky, made me feel welcome, and then some. As some of you already know, Stephen and I got married this February at a Doctor Who convention. Yes, that's right. The Gallifrey One convention in LA will be our destination anniversary weekend, as long as that con goes on. Although Chicago TARDIS is where we first met in person, so that's a pretty darn special one as well. We'll be going to that too. And I wouldn't have it any other way. I think that's wonderful. So hosting Verity has brought me into contact with so many fans, each one with a really wonderful story about how they discovered the show and the other people who love it. For some people, fandom is chatting about the latest episode around the water cooler, be it real or virtual. For some, it's knitting circles, sitting around knitting a scarf or a question mark sweater vest. And for some people, it just means creating art and stories in their own safe little space at home by themselves. The list just goes on and on. But for me, it means creating a podcast that I'm proud of, keeping in touch with friends that I really, truly care about, and living a life I could not be happier about. So thank you to Doctor Who, and thank you to you, fandom.
Okay. All right, Jennifer, follow that.
Okay. Yeah, she's got notes, and all I have is statistics, so I'm not going to worry about
Ooh,
that.
I like statistics.
But I will point out that all the stories that Erica was talking about, that everybody has their own story about Doctor Who fandom and how they participate in fandom, a lot of that's actually going to be on the book that I am working on currently with Arnold Blumberg and Steve Hill. It is called Red, White, and Who, The Story of Doctor Who in America. It talks not only about fanish bits, fan clubs, fanzines, conventions, but also talks about the history of the broadcast of the series, and you know where it was shown when and things like that. And so it ties in a uniquely American experience to the whole volumes and volumes of books that have been written about Doctor Who in general for the past 50 years. My story starts really with fan films. I had gone to conventions and stuff before, you know, with the big Panopticon West 1982 here in Chicago, which is 7,000 people here to see Anthony Ainley and Sarah Sutton and John Nathan Turner. And I had joined, you know, out of that I found a club to join, so I was in this club, and it turns out that this club is going to be making a fan film, you know, called Five Faces of Dr. Boo. It's sort of a parody thing. I'm like, well, they needed someone to run the camera, and I happen to be a film major. So I was like, I can run the camera. And so, yeah, it's like, can I be a companion? Well, do you have any costumes? I've got a Sarah costume and a Leela costume. Okay, you can be Sarah. You know? And so this group, we went on to, we've made over 30 films, and, you know, mostly in the 80s. you know, mostly parodies of Doctor Who. But you know, these people are like the closest, become like the closest friends that I have. You know, I've known some of them for 30 years, and it's just wonderful. And they've actually, because of my costuming, I went on to got into convention running, and I dragged them along. And so now I've got this whole group of friends I've known forever that we've run conventions with, and we get to, you know, meet cool people, both in fandom and guests and things like that. And it's just, you know, a whole nice family. You know, that, you know, I feel like an older statesman. I feel like I'm almost a little grandmother now, because you have these little kids who are my daughter's age and younger coming in, and they're all enthusiastic about Doctor Who. It's like, how can I get involved? And I'm like, okay, well, you do this, you do that, and you do that. And they're like, okay. And if you want to talk about Tumblr, talk to someone who's a little younger. You know, but you know, but it's just great. And you know, we'll all be one happy, you know, one happy family. We have our, you know, our tips, of course, you know, whether or not, you know, you know, the Moffat era is better than Davies era, whether or not, you know, Sylvester McCoy is a better doctor than John Pertwee, that kind of thing.
Whether they're shagging in the TARDIS.
Or not. Yes.
Don't get me started,
yeah.
Then.
Yeah, but, you know, it's like we're all, you know, we all basically have the same ideals, because we all are into the show, and we all, you know, believe, you know, what the show speaks of, and we all want part of that in our life, and it's just really wonderful.
Tammy?
I am socially challenged. I'm not very good at making friends. I have social anxiety like you wouldn't believe. And we literally went to our first Doctor Who convention to escape Thanksgiving with my family.
That's always the best reason to come to Chicago, TARDIS.
Yeah,
your real family.
It was like family awkwardness, because my parents were getting divorced, or go see strangers. And
so that's how bad the divorce was, huh?
Seriously, like, super awkward. So, and like, I've met all of these, like, lovely, nice people and, you know, like minds that, you know, I had been kind of driven out of comics fandom by, you know, boys being boys and, you know, girls don't read comics and that whole shenanigan mess. And so it was like, oh my God, there are girls at this convention, and, you know, they talk about a female experience of enjoying Doctor Who with, you know, cosplay and fan fiction writing. Fan fiction is not a four-letter word here. And so I got more involved in the fandom and ended up writing Torchwood Babies, and God bless Katie Shuttleworth, who arted it, and it took her like 4 years, which is a sin because it probably took me about 2 hours to write it. And I broke two of her computers. So, like, and just weird stuff happened after that. Like, you know, Gary Russell came up to me at a convention, and he's like, so when's the next part of Torchwood Babies coming out? And I'm like, I'm supposed to ask you when Sarah Jane's gonna air. And just weird things like that. And, you know, other opportunities to, you know, get stuff published came from that. And it was a really great social opening for me, because I'm terrible at starting conversations and talking to people. So they'd see my username on my badge, and they'd start a conversation with me, which would completely relieve the burden of having to, you know, it's like, how does one small talk in conversation? So we'd have something in common to talk about, and it was, you know, beautiful and lovely. And I mean, I met my husband through Nightwing fandom. So, you know, I have had long fandom experiences, but I never really had good, sustaining, positive ones until Doctor Who and Doctor Who conventions.
Okay, so we're going to go around one more time, and we're going to start again with Carol, because I have a specific story I think I want her to tell.
Oh, God, I hope I remember.
You will. I want to ask us all about our own sort of most surreal, unusual, strange, sort of the edges of what we have experienced in fandom, where you kind of go, huh, and it's not necessarily like a bad thing, it's just, that's something I was not expecting. I was thinking about the Torchwood Shrine story.
Oh, when...
The Yanto Shrine.
Oh, yes. you probably know that Yanto dies.
Spoiler! Oh! It's 5 years old. It's not a spoiler.
The statute of limitations is long gone on that one.
I'm just kidding. He doesn't. But in if you've ever been to Wales, anybody ever been to Wales?
Yeah.
Yes. And have you know that the entrance to the hub is actually used to be an old fishing dock that's right underneath the whole revamped Cardiff Bay area. So you have to go down these stairs, and you have to make a turn, and then there's the wall and the door that they always film the exterior shots. Or, as I like to think, it is the real entrance to the hub, all right? So John and I are hanging around Cardiff Bay, and he has never been down there, and so he says, let's just go down and have a look. I said, you know what, if you go down there, you know what's going to happen, you're going to have to take it. He said, no, let's just go down there. So we go down the stairs, and I said, okay, let me take a picture of you, because the whole thing is a shrine to Ianto, right? There's flowers everywhere, there's posters everywhere, there's pictures, there's people kneeling and praying. I mean, it's just unbelievable what's going on. So, and there's this couple, or these few people behind us, and all of a sudden there's more and more people coming because they saw Captain Jack's going down to the hub, you know. So they're following us down, and so John goes right up to the wall and puts his hands right on the face and goes, ah! Running around and coming down, and we're already trying to be incognito. So I take a few pictures, and then it took us like 3 hours to get out of there, but it was awesome. It was an awesome moment.
I should have had you go last. But
I know.
Yeah, now we're going to can't top that.
Do you have anything sort of weird in there?
Sorry.
No, not really.
So your fandom experience has been pretty rock steady and just very pleasant all the time, nothing ever unusual?
The guy who's the president of the Doctor Who club that I was joined in Edmonton thought of it as a dating service. And he'd go around trying to pick up the few women that were members of the club, which wasn't an effective method because he had a pickup line of, I'm a born-again virgin. But otherwise, yeah, we're good. Yeah.
Although it seems to me there's some element of dating and you know, romance that's involved, which I love. I love that part of it. I think
maybe that's just an
awesome
Edmonton thing, because that's where Stephen's from.
Well, there are a lot of clubs in the Midwest in the 80s that kind of fell apart because they're too much, you know, inner dating going on.
Too much turn.
You know, it's like, you know, Josie is with Kyle this week, but no, they broke up, so now she's with Herbert, and now they broke up, now Herbert's with Kyle, and nobody could keep it. Yeah. You know?
It's like Torchwood all over again.
Yeah. Except not so much swearing, you know?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to talk about my weird and wonderful experience, which simply put is Chickstick Time Lords winning a Hugo Award.
Yeah.
Yay.
Now, just... Thank you, guys, and thank you to everyone who actually was a Hugo voter in that year. Thank you. The thing about Chickstick Time Lords winning a Hugo is that it was a milestone on several different levels, the first level being that it was only the seventh book about media of any kind ever nominated for a Hugo in the Best Related Work category. It was the first book about media of any kind ever to win a Hugo in the history of the Hugos, full stop. And it is, I think Tara and I were the seventh and eighth editors, or eighth and ninth editors ever who were women to win Hugo Awards. So it is a milestone in the history of the Hugo Awards. And it was we were shocked to be nominated, quite frankly. And we were like, we looked at the slate and we were like, yeah, we're totally going to lose. Like we went and we were like, we're going to look so good at the losers party. It's going to be awesome, you know. And we sat there, and then they said Chickstick Time Lords, and like it took us a second because we thought we were being punked. Like it was like, did they really just call our names? And then we heard the screaming behind us, and we were like, oh, they did call our names, because Shauna McGuire is sitting near us going, get up, you won, you know. And so we got up there and we said our pieces, and then I was so overwhelmed that I couldn't actually not scream at Tara before we got off stage. Like, we weren't off stage, and I was like, ah! Because I couldn't believe we'd won. And we went to the after party, because they give you a party to sort of calm down before you have to go back out and wander around with this enormous phallic statue, where there's no good way to hold this thing, just so you know. It took exactly 10 minutes for there to be a picture of me on Facebook with my mouth open over the tip of the Hugo. And that's because of Paul Cornell, because he was on stage having collected the Doctor Who Hugo that year, and he called my name. He said, Lynn, and I went, what? Well, open the Hugo and turned to face him, and that's the picture that ended up on Facebook within 10 minutes, just so you know. Paul came up to me after the event, where we're in the sort of the party room before they open it up to the general public. And I was just sort of sitting at this little table, and like I had a piece of cake, because they give you cake sometimes. There's usually food and beverages. And I'm sort of sitting there eating cake, and I'm just kind of staring into space with the Hugo sitting there. And he came over, and he's like, why aren't you happy? Why aren't you like ecstatic? And I was like, no, Paul, you don't understand. I have run through all the feels. I have had every feeling I have ever had, am having now, and will ever have, all in a space of about half an hour. I'm just done. I went numb, because I just didn't understand how to process this enormous phallic object sitting next to me. So for me, that was by far the most surreal moment in Doctor Who fandom, which would not have been possible without everyone in this room, all of the people sitting up here, everyone who contributed to the volume, and everybody who ever ran across the dealer's room having seen Katie Shuttleworth's amazing color cover and went, what is this? And then read it and went, this is awesome. Because
Katie makes the bestest art.
She does. She makes the bestest arts. And I have the original Torchwood nesting dolls set that Katie made. I just want to put that out there. There are replicas now, but I have the first one. and it's on my mantelpiece, and it's wonderful.
I have
wonderful.
A TARDIS one.
Yeah. That's pretty cool. It's pretty awesome.
So mine anyway. Is better than yours.
Yeah, but my Torchwood nesting doll sit next to my Hugo.
Yeah, you're right.
Okay, I'm done bragging now. Sorry. See, this is what happens when you get two alphas in a room. It's just never pretty. Okay, Erica, you should probably like tell us about something
a little more calm.
A little more formative.
Well, I don't have any Hugos, that's for sure.
Yet.
Oh, please. Honestly, the most surreal fan experience I think I've ever had is you're looking at it right now. 5 months ago, I was just a Doctor Who fan. I watched the show every week. I was really excited about it. I listened to a bunch of podcasts, and then, like I said, I started making one, and people apparently started listening to it. And here I am now, sitting up on a stage talking about it. I was actually in Calgary last weekend at the Calgary Expo Science Fiction Convention, and I was...
Did you see John?
I was actually at the Torchwood VIP dinner.
And you know, John.
I didn't actually speak to him or anything, but I did see him. Yeah. And
I understand that everybody saw his bottom, too.
There are two people in the world that haven't seen John's ass.
Bottom yet.
If I can interrupt with a real quick funny story, that when I was over there, when he was in Phantom of the Opera, John actually started his life as a musical theater performer. Some of you may know that. And and this was when they still had phone boxes that didn't have doctors going in and out of them in the London streets. So I actually was in a phone box. I was trying to find the theater. He was going to meet me. It was between matinee and the final show. And I said, I know I'm close. I'm in the Strand. I gave him the address. I said, so how do I know what building and where you are? And so I turned this corner, and here's this beautiful Victorian building with a big ass shoved right up against one of the upstairs windows. And this is my brother, I recognize.
You're like, I think my brother.
I changed its diaper. No, seriously, we have taken off in planes and small airports, and John has said goodbye this was pre-9/11, with his ass hanging out on one of the windows. And then everybody looks and says, I think someone's mooning us. It's a Barrowman thing, I have to say.
Yeah, I hear there were Iron Man underpants.
My kids would
like,
yeah, the Iron Man underpants were pretty sweet. Were pretty sweet. But at that VIP dinner at the table, it's, you know, big tables of 8 or 9 people, and Stephen and I were sitting there. And there were a couple of girls fangirling over Steven, which I'm completely used to. But there was somebody who was a Verity fan. And that just, my little brain went splody, splody. I was just like, wow. So that was the crazy moment.
That's
for
cool.
me.
Mm-hmm.
Jennifer?
Oh, gosh, I'm torn between two.
Oh, tell them both.
All right, oh, tell them both. I'll tell you one quick one from back in the day. I was in a costume contest with a bunch of people from my fan club. We were doing... 5 Doctors and Perry, and with Wax Works, Tom Baker. Sorry, Tom Baker was, you know, like, you know, being, you know, pretending he was a stiff and stuck out. And John Purdy was one of the judges, and he was dressed as Wurzel Gummidge. and so it's like he was looking at it, and we had to go back up on stage and show, because the judges were actually sitting on stage as well. We had, like, you know, show our stuff. And he suddenly goes to his Wurzel Gummidge voice, "I want to see the girls' titties!" And I was like... It's like, okay. This is loud enough that everybody in the auditorium, I'm like, okay, I'm gonna die. I'm glad I'm back to the audience because they can't see how red I am. Yeah.
Yeah.
But the other one is at.
So you showed him?
I was helping to hold the guy, hold the time. So we put him down on the ground, you know, and then, you know, he's like, oh, very nice, very nice. just past the year at Chicago TARDIS. At the end of the convention, we have all the guests come back up and, you know, for a big last photo op and to say goodbye and things like that. And they come off the stage, and usually as they come up off the stage, you know, I say, you know, thanks, everything, you know. But they started hugging me as they're coming out, and that's when I got, like, hugged by every person came off. And it's like, oh, my God, the guests are hugging me. Oh, what did I do? I was thinking, you know, even though I work with them and everything, just to get hugs, you know, like that. It's just like, oh, my gosh, I guess I'm doing good, you know.
Miss Sladen hugged me once. She smelled very nice.
Oh, she did. She had great perfume choices.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, two weird ones. Tony Lee, who wrote the IDW Doctor Who comic, we became weird friends and got really, like, seriously drunk one night. And we came up with this, like, beautiful story about this planet that's about the Doctor, and only they have everything wrong. And he actually pitched it to Gary Russell, and the only reason why it didn't get done was because they were canceling the comic 2 issues before. And my other story was, like, we had this weird day after a convention where, you know, you guys remember my dog Fleming. Where we were sitting in the lobby, you know, and Louise Jameson comes over and is like, you know, how can I hug your dog, blah, blah, blah. We have a nice, lovely conversation about adopting retired seeing eye dogs. That was nice and cool. Then Gareth David Lloyd comes up, and he is stoned. I'm sorry that he's just stoned. And he bends over my dog and has this entire conversation with my dog, like my dog is responding to him. And this goes on for about 20 or 30 minutes. And then he just wanders off.
Oh my God.
And then, like, 5 minutes later, Terrence Dix is like, we're going to Al Capone's grave. Do you want to go with us? And I'm just like, what is my life?
Okay, so we have established that fandom can be wonderful. It's a great way to find a new source of found family. It can be completely and utterly strange and surreal and involve John's bum. So now we want to open it up to questions. You're welcome to ask us questions if you have questions for us, or you can tell us about your wonderful or surreal fandom experiences or what fandom in Doctor Who is for you. And I'm going to try to go in the order of hands as I see them. So you are first, and you are second, and all the way in the back, you are third. Go ahead.
I just want to learn a little more about your podcast, because I haven't heard about it.
Excellent.
Yeah, it's okay. Awesome. It's called Verity at veritypodcast.com.
Okay.
Yes.
It's six opinionated women.
All talking about Doctor Who.
Oh, okay. So it's not like, all right.
Yeah.
It's Erica and Deb Stanish, who is one of the editors of Chicks Unravel Time, are the co-hosts. And then there's a rotation of 4 other women. Myself, Tansy Rayner-Roberts, who is an Australian fan and fantasy writer and does a lot of wonderful fan writing about Doctor Who in her own right and has written for Chicks on Ravel Time. And L.M. Miles, Liz Miles, who was in Chicks Dig Time Lords, co-edited Chicks on Ravel Time and is very, very Scottish and very, very opinionated. And I love her to bits. And if you tell her that Patrick Troughton is not the best doctor, she will yell at you.
And possibly punch you.
And she's not violent. Not that bad.
Then she's really not Scottish.
Yeah. she might sick her sheep on you. That's more likely.
The longer the convention goes on, the more socialist she gets.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
And then Katrina
Griffiths, who is the co-host of the Across the Planet comic podcast, and was also the co-host of Bridging the Rift, which was a kind of short-lived Doctor Who podcast about fandom, actually. Yep. A few years ago, and
basically we get together four at a time and have some wine and talk Doctor Who. So we're trying to sort of bring Bar Con to everybody. Mm-hmm. Okay, you had a question.
So coming down from C2E2, which was last weekend, and as a cosplayer, as a Whovian cosplayer, one of my favorite parts is last weekend when younger kids and other cosplayers would come up to me and ask me, like, Oswin, who are you? How did you escape the Daleks?
That's cool.
Interaction with them. I know Jennifer touched on cosplaying a little bit, but I was wondering if anyone has any great cosplaying stories of characters that you did yourself or you want to do, or any great costumes that you've seen at other conventions.
Oh, I have one.
Go ahead.
It's another Welsh story. When Wales has a Doctor Who museum, or a Doctor Who,
It's the Doctor Who experience.
Thank you so much. A Doctor Who experience. And John and I had never seen it, and you know, we've been in Wales forever, and we decided to go in there. And we picked a time that we thought was pretty quiet, and we started walking around. And how many of you been into the experience? It's like a Madame Tussauds kind of thing. There's all sorts of costumes, and there's Daleks, and there's all this kind of stuff. And it follows does a history of Doctor Who. It's awesome if you ever go. So we're going around it like fans. And then a family comes in. There's always a family and children involved here. So a family comes in behind us with a bunch of kids, and the kids get to have, like, they do a treasure hunt on a map, you know, and so they get to ask questions and then answer questions based on what they see in the thing. So we're walking around and we turn this corner, and then there's this huge image of John writing Captain Jack, not John. It's not John. It's Captain Jack. Captain Jack writing the missile on when he's, you know.
Oh, yeah.
As you do.
As you do. So we come around that. We figure, oh, we must be in the Torchwood part of stuff, or that. And so we are when the Doctor and Jack have their experiences together. So we go around, and then there's this wonderful tableau of a wax David Tennant and a wax Captain Jack, Doctor, and a couple of, I think there was a Rose Tyler, whatever. So John says, stop that family back there from coming around. So I said, what are you going to do? Now, I'm a mother. My children are grown. I don't care about destroying other children.
That's why you became a YA writer.
That's right. That's right. That's why I write young adult fiction. That's right. So anyway, so I talked to the parents. I'm slowing them down. But we were really good. I whispered to the mom that John Barrowman was around the corner, and I think he was going to try to scare the kids. Like, yeah. And I said, so because I didn't want, like, some real serious thing to happen, you know. Yeah. Barrowman, you know, Captain Jack kills children. So we were kind of prepared. So anyway, we come back around, and, you know, the tableau is, it's typical sort of the big money shot. You know, there's, like, Jack and the Doctor, and their coats are going back like this. Except John has stripped the one that was Captain Jack.
Oh,
he has, this is why I'm thinking cosplay, right? He has dressed up as Captain Jack, and he's standing like this, right? And, you know, I mean, you guys can just see it coming. The kids are coming around, and they're looking, and this is the tableau right here, and they're right down here, and he's just waiting, and he's waiting. Honest to God, he looked just like a wax Captain Jack. And the mom was awesome. She keeps going to this five-year-old, go on up and touch him. So that's exactly what happens. The little boy comes up and goes like this, and John picks his coat and goes, "Whoa!" It was amazing.
So, like, was he banned?
No. but you know what did happen is we didn't get out of there very fast because somehow word got out. The experience is in a mall where there's like an AMC theater, and so word got out. You know, it's never John Barrowman is in there. It's Captain Jack's in there. You know, so.
Is the kid okay?
Who cares? It was funny. Well, actually, you know what he did? He laid it down, and the kid. But you know, the kid wasn't. If you'd been paying attention, you could see. But the kid was so excited, and he came around. So what John did in penance is he signed absolutely everything that family bought for the little boy. Was great. He was fine. But so John had to sign all this stuff, and before we actually bought tickets and snuck in. You know, and so the person suddenly realized who was in there. She's like, "I have to give you back your admission." And he's like, John's like, "No," and I'm like, "We're Scottish, yes!" Now I'm dominating, sorry.
Do any of the other panelists have cosplay stories they want to? Jennifer, you run masquerades. You must have some good ones.
Well, I have recreations of most of the classic series companions' costumes in trunks, so can't quite fit in them.
Oh, I want some of those.
That'd be awesome. Yeah, but my daughter's now of an age where she's actually starting to wear them, so I've been rigging them up.
That's cool.
Back in the 80s when we were making films, we would frequently run out of props, or like we would need Mountain Dew or something, and so we would go in costume to the Jewel or to the Domino's and just, you know, or McDonald's especially, and just be, you know, people would always dress like this in the middle of summer with a scarf or, you know, and a sweater and everything. You know, people look at, you know, some people, you know, of course, recognized it right away, but the rest of everybody else was like,
yeah.
I've never cosplayed, but I did knit the season 12 scarf for my mom. And I'm currently working on a season 18 one, but it's been like 2 years and I haven't touched it in a while. So we'll see if that ever happens.
I knitted season 18 scarf, which I actually cast on when I was brought into the Chick Stick Time Lords project, because it was Tara's project, and then I was brought in later on because her family life went boom and she needed help, and I was brought in to help. I cast on the scarf when I was brought into the project, and I finished it right about when the book came out. So that was sort of, that's my Chick Stick Time Lords
scarf. And you now have it wrapped around that giant penis that's on you.
Actually, we strung TARDIS lights. From the Hugo.
As you do.
As you do. The scarf is actually on the hat rack that's in the Doctor Who room. Because I don't have a dining room. My husband, who brought me into fandom, he's the hardcore fan who corrects me on my continuity errors. Very kindly, but he's right. Because I make a lot of errors. He yells back at every podcast I'm on when I'm talking about Doctor Who. Because he's like, "You got that wrong!" And I'm like, "I'm sorry. I was busy focusing on the emotions again." But we have a hat rack in the Doctor Who room. I don't have a dining room. I have a room full of Doctor Who stuff that happens to have a table in the middle. And eventually we will get around to building, like, we have this grand plan of creating a console that can raise and lower the table.
That's funny.
You know,
yeah.
not that we're particularly handy. So if anybody wants to come to our house and create the console.
Well, you know, I do have a TARDIS console in my basement.
Will it fit on top of our dining room table?
It might, yeah. It might.
Because we could totally hook up the levers and just have, like, for when company comes over, you lift it up. And then, you know, then it's like a TARDIS chandelier made of the console, and as long as it doesn't drop on the food, you're fine.
John has a Dalek, and when you open his front door in Wales, there's this big black Torchwood Dalek just right there.
Yeah.
Just, awesome. It's the best house to go to on Halloween.
Yeah.
Jillian, do you do cosplay?
No, well, I only dressed up once, and that was for a convention in 89, and I was Sir Gassidy from the Trial of the Time Lords, and I manufactured the hat.
Wow.
And that hat lasted about 5 years until the paper mache finally disintegrated.
Wow.
But yeah, I had Sir Gassidy, and
that's
it was a good costume, actually. Yeah.
I've not cosplayed yet, although someone thought I was cosplaying last year, because I was at Chicago TARDIS and I was wearing a red dress, and I was wandering around, and there was a group of red Kangs. And so I was wandering around, and I was sort of playing around that I was like, I was River Song as a Red Kang. So it's like, Red Kang's the best, sweetie, you know. And somebody thought I was cosplaying Lucy Saxon, and I was like, but I don't have a black eye. Because she had... Well, because... No, no. because that particular point in the continuity, she's wearing the red dress with a black eye. Not because I think that Lucy Saxon should always have a black eye, but that if I was going to be doing it, I would want to be doing it at that specific
We should maybe
point.
Ask for more questions.
Yeah, 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 we have an answer to that. Go ahead, please.
Oh. One of my best friends actually is Dr. Noyes, and he is a trucker. So yes, I'm a fan. Yeah.
Oh, see. People write fanfic. People build TARDISes. I mean, why not have a Doctor Who rock band?
Yeah, there's a local Chicago trucker.
Yeah,
who's
it's Time Crash.
Yeah, Time Crash. Yeah,
that's who I heard of. Yeah.
And I've heard of Chameleon Circuit. And
right, and there was the Kids BV band down in Florida, which does Celtic. Truck.
Yeah, and then of course there's Traffic, who did the theme for the Verity podcast.
Traffic That's Experiment.
Awesome. Yeah, Traffic Experiment. They're awesome.
Okay, most of our lives, I would say, Doctor Who fandom has been that little cultish thing. Mm. How weird, and what do you think of that it's now you can go to a Barnes & Noble if you have one still in your community? Or is it Hot Topic now sells bow ties or
That is.
Does it feel like, get away from my fandom?
Or high schools. There's every high school I know in southeastern Wisconsin, I'm sure it's the same around here, has a Doctor Who club. And it's huge. I mean, it's not just like if it were you and I and with our cigarettes behind the gym.
But this has come around again, because in the early 80s, it was the same thing. Mm, every high school, every college had their own Doctor Who club. You could go into bookstores and buy Doctor Who books. I think, we didn't have a Hot Topic then, so you couldn't actually buy the shirts. But, it's very well, found. The Tribune was always writing articles about it. The TV Guide did an article about Doctor Who in 1984.
I just think it's awesome.
As an old fan, it's just so exciting to see it sort of come full circle.
We're not old fans.
No. Older fans.
Seasoned fans.
And I have a, for various reasons, I have the cover of, I guess it's the season 6 that had the little hologram on it, taped to the front of my computer. And I also have a Victory of the Daleks mug and the TARDIS exploding poster and stuff in my desk at work. And the kids comment on it, like, all the time. And it's a good thing because, I mean, I don't feel like, stay away, it's fine. I was here first.
Yeah, my vanished one.
It actually enables me to start a relationship with the kids over something that we both, like and identify with, and it's sort of that opener because, not very good with people. So it actually allows me to help them academically because we've established that, oh my God, that was my favorite episode of Doctor Who, 2 weeks ago before they actually come in and, ask me for help legitimately on something.
So I will admit. I will admit to a little bit of that get off my lawn sort of feeling. Just as a gut reaction, because it's like I have been here for so many decades, but then my rational brain kicks in and says, wait a minute, the more people that like this thing, the longer it's gonna go on.
That's right.
Hooray! Also, more swag.
Yes,
I love. I tweeted this last week. My husband's a collector. We have a room full of swag. And there is nothing more awesome, for him it was about the hunt for the longest time, and now of course the hunt is easy because I go click, 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 and the hunt comes to our house, right?
It's really awesome. Amazon.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But the beautiful thing is that I ran out after work to run some errands, and I tweeted, I was like, I'm bringing home bourbon, dinner, and Doctor Who Yahtzee. I'm the best wife ever. And I was like, that's my Friday evening. This is perfect.
No, see, I feel very get-off-my-lawn-ish. With Sherlock Holmes fandom? What, much more than Doctor Who fandom, and which is odd because when I actually entered Sherlock Holmes fandom, it was the 90s, I was a kid, and the grown-ups were very much get off my lawn. And I just feel like it's some sort of natural evolution where I get to be like, get off my lawn.
Okay, we have time for one last question. You had your hand up a while back.
Yeah. So awesome, come on in. I'm a teacher, and I have a Dalek on my desk.
So when the kids would ask me, what is that? Oh, it's a Dalek. I had a little girl, I mean, I teach sixth grade, but I had a girl walk past and she saw it on my desk. She slips out of line, comes into my room, and she's like, oh my God, that's a Dalek. Doctor Who. And from there, had this whole conversation. This is a child I never would have had any
contact awesome.
With. That then kind of comes in as my little buddy and wants to come. Did you see the episode?
That's great. Yeah. See, I think that's awesome.
I think it's also great. It's just I'm no longer quite so peculiar as I used to be. because whereas before there was a limited number of Doctor Who fans in my general circle, all of a sudden a lot of people like Doctor Who, and all of a sudden I'm not so weird. It's great because now I can buy stuff with Doctor Who on it a lot easier, and people don't laugh at me. It's wonderful.
Yeah, I'm the cool librarian instead of that weirdo in the corner.
Yeah,
I work in an academic library, and I'm still at the point where you know I have a Doctor Who magazine, 10th Doctor Rose because I heart David Tennant, and TARDIS poster. In my office and a couple of other little tchotchkes. And you know, I will have people sort of wander into my office. And it's like, I have comic book stuff all over my office. It's a very geeky office. My whole department is geeky. And they'll come in and they'll be like, so have you heard of this show called Doctor Who? Yeah. It's like, well, yeah, actually I have. You know, but it's a way to start a conversation with people who might not have taken the time to do that. And that's the beauty of it.
Maybe I can end with one little quick story.
Go ahead.
In my real life, I teach, and I've been teaching for a lot of years. I, you know, was 12 when I started. And I would say in the last 4 or 5 years, students have come into class with, in one case, a Captain Jack shirt on, right, and a mug. I don't think she had a clue, right? And she sat, like, right down in front, and it was the weirdest experience. I'm thinking, do I say something to her? Like, get my brother off the desk, because this is going to be weird. And finally, another student who knew the connections, I said to her, you know, must have whispered to her, while I'm conducting class, that they're siblings, and she just squeals in the middle of class. puts her head down and sobs for 50 minutes. It was both the sweetest and the weirdest.
So Carol, can I ask?
Yes.
Obviously, when you're being Carol Barrowman public figure, you are Carol Barrowman. Do you teach under your married name, or do you?
I don't have a married name.
You don't have a name?
My name is Barrowman.
Okay.
That's it.
I didn't know if you had taken
name.
Your husband's name.
Nope.
I was curious about that.
He didn't want mine. I didn't want his.
I was just curious if it would be an obvious thing signed up for a course with Carol Barrowman.
You know, actually, what happened is it's one of those comp courses where staff, and then we fill it. You know, in colleges sometimes you don't know how many sections you need. So she, to her credit, she did not see Barrowman when she
signed up.
Okay. No.
I was just curious if that was a visible connection or not.
And she shook through the whole semester. Bless her heart.
You know? But did she do okay in the class?
She did great in the class, actually.
Good for her.
Yeah.
Made her work harder.
Because she came back in the third day with a mug with my face on it.
Okay.
Got an A.
And on that note, we are out of time. Thank you, everybody.
Yes, thank you. Thank you, ladies.
Thank you.